listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographers Series 2025. Artistic Direction, Brianna O'Mara and Chris Haring. The series is co-funded by the European Union in the frame of Lifelong Burning, Futures Lost and Found. Today's guest is Matteo Heitzmann, composer and choreographer, whose work Make It Count was invited to this year's Attention series. He told me which lessons from being a dance pepper back in 2018 came in handy now, being back at the festival for residency, how the restrictions during Corona times made him accidentally invent a new instrument, and which role the village he grew up in still plays for him when creating. My name is Almut Kriese, and it was my pleasure to have a chat with Matteo. We are here at the MUMOC, and next to me is Matteo Heitzmann.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm happy you're here. And I want to introduce you briefly. So you are a musician, you are a performer, and you're a composer. And you grew up in a little village in Salzburg where you got in contact a lot with traditional music and you got hooked to some extent, I understood. And then you studied violin, jazz and baroque violin in Linz at the Anton Bruckner University. And after that, you studied performance in Vienna. And after that, also solo. What was it called?
It was at HZD in Berlin. It's called SODA, Solo Dance and Authorship. It's also like a creation performance master.
So you did a lot, and you are quite successfully performing and making music for quite a long time by now. You're part of the ensemble ALMA, and you won, I think, twice with this ensemble. You won the prize of the Deutsche Schallplattenkritik.
Almost. I mean, we were on the shortlist. Yeah.
Okay. And you are also not a new person to Impulse Tanz, because I think it's 10 years from now that you actually gave your first workshop. You taught Schuchplattel.
I was mainly playing violin, but also teaching, yeah.
Together with Simon Meyer. And then you also appeared in his piece Sons of Sissi, which was shown in 2016 and 2017. And there is Lifelong Burning coming into place as well. You were a recipient of the DanceWeb Scholarship in 2018. And DanceWeb is one of the 12 partners of Lifelong Burning, the EU network, the Viennese partner. And this network is organizing a lot of interchanges between the partners to make artists experience international scenes and to network with each other. And DanceWeb is, yeah, the Viennese partner of this network. And the fact that we're talking together now also has to do with the fact that Lifelong Burning is supporting the artists that are invited for the Attention Young Choreographers series every year to Impulse Tanz Festival. And you were invited with a piece to the festival. And our part of Lifelong Burning is to invite you to stay longer than it would be necessary to show your piece, but to have a residency here at the festival. And you're in the midst of it right now.
Exactly.
Yeah. How is it? How do you use your time here? How do you feel being back in Vienna, where you lived for a long time?
I got the key to the studio yesterday from Laura. And I mean, since I already did DanceWeb in 2018, I think I won't make the same mistake of doing too much during Impulse Tanz Festival, because I think this is happening a lot. So when I got offered the studio, I was super happy, but I also knew that I'm gonna do it in a very, very chill way. Because I think this combination of networking, watching shows, then rehearsing, maybe doing workshops, it's a lot. And you kind of tend to definitely do too much. So during Impulse Tanz. So I'm rehearsing for a new piece, which I'm premiering in October at Brut, and it's a performative ballet evening with storytelling, musical storytelling evening about being lost in the fog. It's called Im Styxbaden, which means like, yeah, taking a bath in the river Styx, situated in the Greek mythology, the barrier between the living and the dead. And yeah, that I'm doing at the moment in the studio, creating songs, and yeah.
Do you have collaborators with you?
I have, luckily. Since I would say like 10 years of my artistic work, I was mainly working in collectives. That changed now for a bit, like the last 4 years probably. I work mainly alone. But because I think I'm so influenced by having like a steady group of people around me, I'm just so happy to have like a sound guy I'm working all the time with, and then Lukas Forschauer, which is amazing, and Hannah Krittentangsu, an amazing light designer, who she already did the light design in Make It Count. And I think that's such an fortunate thing to have, to work with partners who already understand the language you're talking.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm happy to hear that you can use the time already so productively and working on your next piece. But I also want to hear something about the piece that you were invited to the festival now. Make It Count, it is called. And you sort of invented a new instrument.
Yeah.
And can you tell me how you came up with this and how it developed? How did you make this piece?
This was a very long process. It all started actually during Corona, when the gyms closed down and I started to jump rope. And I bought a jump rope and I started to train outside. And first I used music to jump, and I was looking for the right BPM. I was looking for the right music. And that since I have a musical education, and I always, when I create, I always think more. I think more as a composer than a choreographer. I changed the music to a metronome. And then at the beginning, I just kind of checked out what kind of rhythmical patterns I can jump, you know, like in which BPM triplets are possible, when can I do 4 or 3, or like, yeah, kind of different patterns. And I'm part of a jazz ensemble, and we had a residency at Borgi and Bess, and I composed a chamber music piece for drums and jump rope. So this was the first thing I did actually with it. And we showed it at Borgi and Bess, which is a very like, it's not that traditional in a musical way, but it's a very like traditional jazz club. So this was very funny that all of a sudden I started with jump rope and then only later took the violin. And there we, this was already with the drummer Judith Schwarz. She's also in the piece. And both of us, we really noticed that there's like such a strong performative energy in it. I really didn't expect it, that the people were like, they were freaking out. And then I thought, okay, let's apply for funding to make a piece out of it. And this was also the time when I started to study in Berlin at HZT. And this was then my main study project also. So this was a very luxurious thing to do actually, because I had like this crazy amount of 2 years. I mean, when does it ever happen? Never.
And what do people see on stage? Can you give me a short description of it?
Yeah. It's almost like a classical concert setup. There are 3 performers on stage, extended drums, me with jump rope and modular synthesizer. And the podest I'm standing on is mic'd with a contact microphone. So you have 3 different kind of signals. There's like the signal of the rope, which is hitting. Then there's the signal of me jumping, like landing on the floor. But there's also, if you sound design it right, the signal of me jumping off. the protest. So, and in total, there's like two by 1 meter, but there are two protests, one by one. And they're differently mic'd also. So I have the possibility to jump on one protest and hit the other. So it's a piece. It's really, I think it's really like a concert format in a way, with a lot of like ongoing rhythmical jumping and really compositional work between me and the synthesizer, me jumping and the drums, then the drums and the synthesizer, of course. And I think that the thing the audience kind of experiences really this physical impact. The audience sees me jump, but also feel it in a way and hear it. So this creates like this almost physical ongoing pulse in the audience. So, and about the piece itself, it's with Judith Schwarz, the drummer, as I already mentioned, and then Arthur Fussi, he's playing modular synthesizer, which is like an incredible instrument. And Lukas Froschauer, the sound technician, sound designer, he's like doing way more than technical stuff. Hannah Kritten, Tengsu, light design, and the production house I'm working with, Moduska Production, based in Vienna.
I was talking to the two curators of the Attention Program, to Brianna O'Mara and Chris Haring, about why they chose your piece to show in this series. And they said that, yeah, this musicality that you put on your body was the most fascinating thing for them. And this endurance and repetition, and that, yeah, you are the metronome to some extent, they said. What is the feedback that you get from audience? Did you get a lot of feedback?
Yeah, I got. It was kind of an overwhelming weekend because the reactions were so positive and heartwarming. I think creating in that way, like really in this intersection of music and performance, is somehow sometimes tricky because it's sometimes too less dance, but too much performance. So too less dance maybe for performance and dance festivals, and way too performative for music festivals. So I was super happy when they both invited the piece. I think, or at least this is my approach to every piece since I grew up in a very small village. I always have like this desire to create something which I can theoretically, not even theoretically, but also in real life, show on the countryside in the small village, but also show in the city. So this is always like this thought I always have in mind during creation. And this is also sometimes very tricky because you need something, you need a material or an approach or something where people maybe not really connected to performance are kind of grasp onto or like hold onto. But you also need material which is not, too boring, or, you know, like people have seen it a lot in the performance bubble. And I think in Make It Count, that kind of works around like this, the physical approach, as you said, because I think people who are more into music can focus on the music part. People who are really into body work, they really can focus on the things I do with my body there. And maybe audience who are not really connected to performance, they really can connect with the fact that I'm jumping for an hour. You know, there's like a lot of empathy there. And I think that kind of creates the way how it's received in a way.
That's pretty much how I felt. I realized that I was very tense when I watched it because somehow the fact that you made this beat, you made this rhythm, I realized how hard it must be and how tired you must get while doing this. And I realized that I was very scared that you could, that you would break down at some point, that you can't hold this up for so long. So I, it created such a tension that I really wanted you to succeed and not fuck it up.
And I think also something, a feedback I got a lot was that they really enjoyed watching me also struggle, but yeah, watching me struggle and somehow also let them inside of me in a way, like that I was very, in German you say durchlässig, like, yeah, you just keep your inside very like open, let's say that way. And this was a big learning curve in a way, because at the beginning I thought when I started and also when I showed the premiere actually, I really thought that I have to, you know, be a machine, don't make mistakes, like being trans from the beginning, because I kind of thought, no, I mean, it's still there, but it's not such a focus on it anymore, that I, for myself, I invented like this term of jumping hypnosis in a way. And I wanted to put so many things in there, like, yeah, like this concept of jumping hypnosis and trans, la la la. And in the end, it's just how you just said, like, it's just jumping in a way, trying to succeed. If you fuck it up, you fuck it up. But also that it's still a concert, you know, like I'm jumping and sometimes I'm more like internal focused, and but sometimes there are like moments where I connect with the drama, where I connect with the synthesizer, and we play together. And also it's like having an instrument in my hands and not being over performative, more like really like that's how I feel. There's no pre-designed vision. It's more like now I'm tired and maybe now I'm super happy because endorphins, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah, I felt like that was also very visible in between, that you had this, like a runner's high, mm-hmm. but a jumper's high to some extent, yeah. Yeah, and it does make sense that this is put into the program that they called the intimate realness, because you can't hide.
This is also one other thing, because the first 70% of the performance, I'm only on the podest in the middle. I mean, there's not so much front light and a lot of backlight, but still, that's like such a focus on me, because I'm in the middle and I'm not moving. I mean, no, I don't mean anything.
Oh, I think you mean a lot. Okay, since this podcast we are recording now in mid of July, but it's going to be released in autumn and winter. So I think it might be very close to the premiere of your piece then. So maybe it makes sense if you tell us a bit more about it and where to see it. It's Brut, right?
Yeah. The premiere is on October 22nd and we show it 22nd, 23rd, 24th and 25th. And it's a fog piece. So we use a lot of fog, a lot of haze, a lot of light. And as I said before, I'm very, very interested at the moment about with ballads. Like really musical storytelling, but not in a way of singer and songwriter, more like an old version of it, which is very simple in a way, but also in the same way not. It's very repetitive, the musical structure itself, but I love that. I think repetitive structures, especially with melodies, they, at least for me, every time this part repeats, I'm able to dig one level deeper in the musicality, because I already know what will come musically, so I can focus on a different thing. And then I already figured out, okay, this is happening there. And then it repeats itself. And then I go one level down. And this is something which I will work a lot. It's called Im Stücksbaden. And there is this connection to being lost, but being lost not as a broad term, more like in a brain foggy way, like being lost in your mind, being totally overwhelmed with yeah, with everything which is happening, which I experience a lot, like I think that's something freelancing artists experience in general a lot, because you work like crazy and you don't know where your head is at that moment, and then maybe 3 months you don't have anything and you're lost again, and then you know you question yourself like, oh shit, what's gonna happen, will I get enough money, and then you work like crazy again. So, and I've like this all of the time, like this high speed and then almost no speed at all, kind of creates for me often like this, where is my head, where am I, is this right, like all those questions, they're so big questions. But I think this, like being lost in this fog and being lost in this grayness in a way, which is sometimes also comforting, which, you know, you can hide in it, but it was like there, I think there are so many possibilities. So yeah, that's a rough.
It feels so relatable, even if you're not a freelance, but yeah. It thinking about working for a festival, it has sort of the same rhythm, and it feels not very healthy to be in this extremely working situation and then it's over and it's like, what am I going to do with myself now? Yeah. All right. Thank you. I'm really happy to hear that you are working on the next project and that we here in Vienna are lucky enough to get the chance to see you very soon back on stage. Thank you very much, Matteo.
Thanks for having me.
You have been listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographers series. To never miss a new episode, follow us on Deezer, Podcast Addict, Apple Podcast, or Spotify. For more artist conversations, visit our websites lifelongburning.eu and impulsdance.com.